Hey guys, I'm Heidi Preeb. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you're new here. Today on this channel, we are going to be talking about the phrase, feel your feelings, and when it is not actually the best advice. So, if you've been around this channel for a little while, you probably already know that I am a very big advocate for things like developing emotional literacy and getting more clear on what we're feeling, getting in touch with our bodies and what's happening inside of our nervous system and what those responses are trying to tell us, as well as finding ways to express all of that in direct ways so that we're able to live as congruently as possible. But there are also times where tuning into what we're feeling internally and amplifying the volume on those signals is actually the direct wrong response. When it comes to getting what we want, or in a lot of cases, what we actually need on a deeper level, out of the situation that we're in. So today, we're going to go over 5 times when that might be true, as well as what might be the better move to make in those situations. Because as much as we can talk about emotional literacy and self-awareness, it is not the only tool that we need in our tool belt. So, without further ado, we will get into what some of those situations are. The first situation where it's not necessarily the best advice to fully feel into our feelings is when our emotions are flooding or completely overwhelming our system. So often that's when we're in one of those fight, flight, freeze, or fawn responses, right? And I want to make the caveat that sometimes those responses are online for a really good reason. If we are genuinely feeling unsafe in a situation that we're in, we are, of course, going to want to listen to those body responses and get ourselves out of that situation and into a safer environment. But other times, we can get stuck in these responses in situations where what's actually happening is that we're just trying to take on too much emotion too fast. So I'll give an example of this. There was a point in my life where I had to move out of a home that I'd shared for quite a while with someone who is now an ex-partner. So after myself and this person had broken up, I'd gone on a trip. They had moved out while I was on said trip. And when I returned home to that apartment, I had a month to move out of the space while also working 30 to 40 hour work weeks. And what I found very quickly was that I was getting really overwhelmed by the kind of double task that I'd created for myself. So task one was obviously to get everything boxed up and ready to be moved out. But task two was readjusting to living in a space that I had never lived in on my own. And I found that the first couple days of staying in that apartment and waking up in the morning and trying to get my work done, I was just getting flooded with all of these emotions as soon as I woke up. So with anger that I was the one who had to move out of this place on my own without any help, and then with sadness and longing for that relationship that had ended, and then with complicated meta feelings about the fact that I was having so many feelings and I couldn't just get down to work and get stuff done like I usually could first thing in the mornings. And something I realized by the second day was that I was just in way over my head. So I was trying to do way too much by both readapting to the space and preparing to leave it at the same time. So I decided to go and stay with a mixture of friends and families and Airbnbs for 1 week, and to kind of titrate my time in that apartment so that I could go in for 4 or 5 hours a day, just enough to clean things up and paint the walls and get things packed up to leave. But within that process, my system also knew that I had a place to go to at the end of every night that was not the apartment. So I knew that I wasn't going to get stuck there at any point and get kind of bogged down in the negative emotions in a way that I couldn't pull myself out of during the hours when I really needed to be doing other things like working or sleeping. And so in a lot of different areas of psychology, when we're dealing with really overwhelming emotions, we often talk about titration, which is basically the process of taking something that would be too much to feel all at once and letting ourselves experience it in small doses. And so that process of titration, of giving ourselves small kind of windows of exposure to feelings that might otherwise kick us right outside of that window of tolerance and into a space where we're not really at choice when it comes to how we're responding to things anymore, this can actually be a really useful way to be in relationship to our feelings, particularly during the times when our systems just cannot handle feeling all of what is going on for us at one time. Situation number two, where fully feeling our feelings is not always the wisest move, is when expressing our feelings would be at odds with keeping ourselves safe. So, I remember when I was taking my master's degree, one of the things that we learned to stay aware of when we were coding a few specific personality and mental health assessments was whether the person being interviewed was, at the time of being interviewed, experiencing ongoing danger or extreme stress in their lives. Because the assumption was that if so, their defense mechanisms were almost definitely going to be significantly heightened, and we were going to have to take that into account. So the way that we would make sense of someone's assessment was going to look very different if they were currently happy and healthy and had great emotional support systems in their lives versus if they were currently experiencing housing instability or poverty, or if they were living in a war-torn area, or if they were in an abusive relationship where maybe they were dependent upon their partner in a bunch of ways that made it really complicated for them to decision make about the relationship. And in any of those latter cases, we were going to have to assume that their defense mechanisms were likely to be functioning in a much more active way than they might in a safer environment. The assumption is that they were likely needing to suppress a bunch of highly relevant and potentially distressing parts of their own lives in order to get their basic day-to-day needs met. So later in this video, we're going to talk about compartmentalization versus suppression. But the short version is we are compartmentalizing when we're making the conscious choice not to think about or dwell on something right now because there are other things that we're trying to get done or whatever it is. We are repressing when our minds and nervous systems are hiding things from our conscious awareness before we ever even get the opportunity to decide whether we want to process those things or not. And so when we are in situations where expressing our feelings would likely lead to significant forms of punishment or danger or severe reprimand, our bodies might naturally start to suppress our feelings for us. If this happens repeatedly to us when we're very young, we might develop a pattern of systematically repressing certain feelings without ever realizing that's happening, right? And this is how a lot of insecure attachment strategies start developing. But this also happens situationally. So if you're going through a period where maybe you recognize that you're having trouble getting in touch with some of your feelings, and some part of you keeps thinking like, man, there's no way that I just feel nothing about the breakup that I just went through, or the death of that person in my extended family, or whatever it is, you might want to consider asking yourself, what would happen in my life right now if I were to fully allow that grief in? And if the answer is something like, I wouldn't be able to get up in the mornings and make my kids breakfast. Or if I were to feel the anger I have towards my spouse, maybe they're going to lash out at me in response. That suppression might be our body's way of doing that titration for us. Because it knows that if all of those feelings rush in, there's a risk that they're going to overwhelm us and we're going to lose control of whether or not we act them out. So whether we do collapse into grief or lash out in anger in an environment where it would be dangerous or otherwise unwise for us to do that. So there's a series of books written by this woman in the UK who has fostered like a record amount of children. I believe she writes under the pen name Kathy Glass. And in a couple of her books, she's talked about taking on children who come from severe trauma or abusive early environments. And something she's brought up is that the safer those children start to feel, often the more intense the acting out of their trauma symptoms becomes. Because for the first time, they're able to actually let down and go into that grief or that rage or whatever it is that they were having to suppress to keep themselves safe in their early environments. By doing things like convincing themselves that everything that was happening to them was normal, or that whatever they were having to endure was their fault, which means that they had some control over it, or whatever other defense mechanisms they had online that were keeping them in connection with the people who were responsible for maintaining their livelihood, right? Our brains are really good at distorting the situations we're in if we feel like we need to learn to survive them by omitting something that it would be intolerable for our psyches to integrate. And so it's only when we're actually in an environment where we're safe enough to start seeing things as they actually are, and to react to those things without fear of retribution, that those updated perspectives are going to come out and allow themselves the chance to be seen and felt. And so the point that we're kind of circling around here is that if we're looking to get more in touch with what's going on for us, sometimes the first thing it can be really helpful to focus on is actually stabilizing our lives and finding relationships and environments we can put ourselves in that allow our nervous systems the chance to relax, to drop the hypervigilance or the dissociative programs that come online in response to threat, and to just give ourselves a safe space for whatever is buried a little deeper to come up to the surface. Right? And it still might take some coaxing out, but the point here is that, again, emotional access for most of us is downstream of safety. So the more safety we're able to create, the more the mind and nervous system does what they are naturally designed to do under safe enough circumstances, which is tell us the truth and send us the signals that we need to make sense of what we have been through. The third situation when feeling our feelings might not be the most effective strategy is when we have a known and consciously identified pattern of feeling things selectively. Meaning, when we are aware that there's a particular way we tend to relate to certain emotions that, when left unchecked, tends to reliably create unnecessary suffering for us. This basically looks like any pattern of consistently listening to and maybe even ruminating over or getting stuck on certain emotional signals, while completely tuning out or ignoring other ones. For example, I am someone personally who has struggled with depression on and off for a lot of my life. And something I've learned over that time is that I have a tendency, when a depressive episode hits, to believe that the solution to my depression is to just sit down and think my way out of it. So in that state, I tend to really trust any emotional signals that feel like excitement over a cognitive insight, and I downplay or ignore the signals that are telling me to do things like get up and move my body, or seek out social interaction, or whatever it is. So what I've learned over time is that often when I'm feeling depressed, I need to do a bit of conscious overriding of my impulses and go, you know what, no matter how certain I feel right now, that I'm definitely like an hour away from cracking the code on my whole mental health state, I might nonetheless need to force myself to also get up, take a walk, do something with my hands, like cook a meal, or take a social or professional call that I'm not really in the mood to take, because I know that right now I'm operating under a familiar and identified pattern of overvaluing my body's calls for immobility and undervaluing its calls for connection and action. And this could also be true in the opposite direction, when we're dealing with more activated response, like in the case of anxious attachment. So our bodies might be overvaluing signals of relational threat and danger, and thinking that the conversation we're having needs to immediately get resolved right away, or else we're going to lose the connection with this person forever, while simultaneously undervaluing our incredibly normal needs for things like space, co-regulation with people who are outside of the dynamic, and time to sort out whatever it is that we're feeling beneath the surface of that survival trigger. And so the point here is that feel your feelings isn't always a neutral instruction if we have a tendency to not feel all of our feelings equally. Some of us have a couple of emotional channels that tend to come through really loud and clear, and then we have a few that we habitually tend to tune out of. So the work that we sometimes need to do is intentionally turning the volume down on some of those really loud and persistent channels, and then making a point to tune into and get the signals from those lesser frequented ones. So this is about balancing our emotional range. If and when we know that there's some areas where we've developed some kind of psychological lopsidedness after a lot of years of living, as many, many, many of us do. The fourth instance where feeling our feelings is not always the most generative advice is when you just need to compartmentalize for a short period of time for a specific reason. So I think that, kind of similar to how CBT has become a lot less popular in recent years, I think that the concept of compartmentalization has also kind of gotten lost in the mix is a very healthy and sometimes completely necessary coping skill. And the first thing I want to make clear is that, again, there is a difference between repression or even suppression and compartmentalization, okay? Repression is when our system has learned to identify an emotion as kind of inherently unsafe. And so we often find a way to regulate away from that emotion before it ever even comes into our conscious awareness. And then suppression is kind of an in-between thing where the emotion usually does surface in our conscious awareness, but we find a way to kind of intentionally push it away with the hopes that it will just stay gone if we don't pay that much attention to it. And then compartmentalization is when the feeling arises in our conscious awareness and we can recognize it as important and worth paying attention to, but we're also aware that now is not the right time. So we can think of our emotions in this sense kind of the way that we would think of getting a call from a friend in the middle of a workday when we can't pick up. Repression would be turning our phones on Do Not Disturb so that we don't even know the call is coming through when it's happening. Suppression would be noticing the call coming through and going, ugh, if I don't pick that up, maybe they'll just stop calling and I won't have to answer it. Compartmentalization would be the equivalent of seeing that call coming through and going, I can't answer that right now, but I will give this person a call back as soon as I'm done work. So this is the process of recognizing that a feeling is important, it has something to communicate to us that we are going to want to pay attention to, but it's just not the right time in this exact moment to sit down and be with it. That could be because we are at work for 6 more hours. It could be because we are caring for our children at the moment. Or it could be a whole period of our lives where we're in the middle of some major transition, like moving or getting in or out of a new relationship, where in order to kind of keep ourselves together, we have to allow ourselves to function under the principle of, I am just going to need to come back to this because I cannot do it all right now. So there's a period of my own life where I was trying to move, process a breakup, and care for a sick family member full time. And as I was moving through all of this, I noticed myself starting to reach out for a bunch of old coping strategies that I had really not defaulted to in many years. And then realizing, you know what? I think this is what I can do right now. I do not have the time or the space or the emotional bandwidth to process all of this stuff in a way that I really will need to at some point. But for now, I'm just going to have to do a little bit of numbing out and compartmentalizing those feelings so that I can get on with the parts of my life that need to be attended to right now in an urgent way. And I can trust and promise myself that I will find time in the future to metabolize all of the grief that's trying to get my attention right now. And eventually I was able to. And the point that we're circling around here is that there are times in our lives where compartmentalization is a form of wisdom. And if we start using it to avoid our feelings, that is, of course, a different story. But when done consciously and intentionally, compartmentalization is actually a lot more like triaging in a busy ER room, where we are saying to ourselves, this stuff that's coming up is important, it needs to be attended to, and I am responsible for figuring out the right order right now. Maybe first, I need to really focus on stabilization, and then the processing can follow from there. All right, and fifth and final instance we're going to talk about today, where feeling our feelings is not necessarily the best advice, is when our feelings are downstream of a problem that really needs to be attended to upstream. So this might be something like a situation where we find ourselves stuck having the same argument over and over again with the same person without anything shifting, and it keeps perpetually dysregulating us. Or situations where we keep trying to fix our lives in the same way, using the same strategies that keep producing the same disappointing results. Or if we are just plain unhappy with where we live, or with our work or our social circle, or with any other area of our lives that is just a bad fit. And in these cases, I want to be clear, it's not that we don't want to notice and pay attention to the feelings that are coming up. Things like frustration or pain or longing that are arising in our systems over and over again have real signal in them. But what we don't want to be doing is getting so good at treating the symptoms that we start completely ignoring the underlying cause that is continuously producing those symptoms. So sometimes the best fit solution to an emotional problem is to update our expectations about a situation so that we're not chronically getting disappointed by circumstances that are just not going to work out the way that we want them to. Or to set a boundary with someone so that we're not chronically getting hurt by them and needing to soothe that ache over and over and over again. Or otherwise changing the structure of our lives so that we're not leaving ourselves unprotected from the things that we need to be protecting ourselves from. Sometimes our emotions do just need to be expressed and released, but other times they are here to alert us to a genuine need for course correction. So in those instances, feeling our feelings is only step one. We need to make space for our feelings and get in touch with them, but then also ask ourselves the question, what are these recurring emotions trying to orient me towards? Is there some area of my life where I have been avoiding facing the fire and making some hard decisions that will actually help my life get back on track? Just like that famous quote, "It's no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society," it is also no measure of psychological health to be emotionally regulated inside of an unhealthy emotional environment or an unhealthy relationship or whatever it is. And so the overall takeaway of this video is that emotional presence is, of course, a super important skill to have in our tool belt and one that I recommend we default to quite often. But it's not always the only one that we need. Sometimes we need emotional titration. Sometimes we need to build more safety and stability into our lives. Sometimes we need to shift the focus of our attention a bit to achieve more balance in the way that we're attending to our emotions. Sometimes we really need to think about timing. And other times we need to change the conditions that we're in a concrete way, in order to avoid continuing to encounter that same kind of pain over and over and over again. The highest possible use of our feelings is to let them guide us back into integrity, which means a place where we're able to design a life for ourselves that actually works. All right, I am going to leave this at that for today. But as always, if you have any thoughts or questions that have been popping up for you as we've gone through this video, please leave them in the comment section below. I love you guys. I hope you're taking care of yourselves and each other. And I will see you back here again really soon.